prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
The truth will set you free. It is Truth Revolution. I'm Dave. With me is Jeff. And of course, as every week, we contend that faith and reason can coexist together, and we're going to do it again.
And we're going to do it all natural today.
All natural. We're talking about naturalism.
So,
how do we know the spirit realm is real? How do we know?
Yeah, I mean, the world we live in is very physical. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting at a table that I can touch. I'm looking at a co-host that I can see, although I'm not sure I always want to.
Don't
want to
smell either.
But
it's too early.
Dang, man.
Daylight savings thing threw me off.
It threw me off, too. I woke up at 3 in the morning, I didn't feel good, and I was just like, I'm just a dog today.
Right, but the show must go on.
So we're talking about naturalism. So naturalism, you know, is basically the belief that everything is made of natural material.
Mm-hmm.
There are materialists and there's pantheists that all kind of fall into the same category when you're talking about metaphysical beliefs.
Now, what is a pantheist?
Well, a pantheist believes that everything is God.
Okay.
A panentheist believes that everything is in God, like a goldfish in a bowl swimming in the water, like the water is God and goldfish is swimming and living in God. That's a panentheist.
Wow.
We are theists. We believe there's a God that exists that we interact with, but he's totally separate from creation.
Right.
And so a materialist is someone who believes in creation, or the material that exists, but doesn't necessarily believe that there is a God or a spiritual realm outside of or apart from this.
If you can't touch it, taste it, smell it, see it, hear it, then it doesn't exist.
That's right. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about naturalism, but before we do that, I want to jump into near-death experiences.
Okay.
Now, this is interesting because we have in our show, we've done months and months, tons of shows about evidences for Jesus Christ, for the Bible, for all sorts of things like that on the spiritual side. So, but I'm going to skip past those today because we have a ton of evidence for the spiritual realm. If you just listen to our past shows.
Mm-hmm.
So go listen to our past shows at truthrevolution.tv.
There you go.
That was a really good plug, huh?
Yeah. Shameless.
Our website is truthrevolution.tv. People will keep asking me, by the way, is it truthrevolution.com? No, it's truthrevolution.tv. I know. It's this newfangled website, Ethernet website address.
We do have some videos on there, so you can technically call it TV.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to be trying to get more videos and things like that up as well. So anyway, truthrevolution.tv, and we got information on Revolution Church there too, so you can find out when and where we meet. You can find out more about the radio show, see past shows, things like that. But anyway, on truthrevolution.tv, if you have a question, in the upper right-hand corner it says ask a question. So you can ask a question about anything you want. If you want to challenge us about naturalism or materialism, just go on there, shoot us a question.
We're not afraid.
But you can check out the other evidences for the spiritual realm on that website.
Right.
Today, I want to talk about a different type of evidence. I want to talk about these near-death experiences.
Okay.
All right. Michael Sabam, this guy is a cardiologist who researched near-death experiences. We're going to call these NDEs for 25 years. I mean, for a long time, he's researched these things. Let me read you a quote from him.
All right.
When I began my research over 25 years ago, I believed reports of the NDE to be absurd. On closer examination, I found verifiable out-of-body experiences to be inexplicable from a merely physical scientific standpoint. Biblical research then suggested that these experiences may involve the spiritual dimension. Combining the scientific and biblical evidence, I now find it highly probable that NDE is a spiritual experience during which the soul enters, quote, the shadow of death.
Wow.
This is from a cardiologist who, he thought near-death experiences were fake, and he set out to research them, presumably to show people how dumb they were.
Well, there's a lot of scientists or doctors and stuff like that, or high learned people who are like, this is just nonsense.
Well, yeah, there are.
Everybody tries to explain it away.
Right, but this guy who researched it, this Michael Sabam, a cardiologist, if you want to look him up, Sabom is his last name, a cardiologist. For 25 years, he researched it, came to the conclusion that something spiritual is happening. But naturalism is the belief that there's no spiritual realm, or at least none that we can talk about.
Right.
To many secular students, there's one requirement. God is an unacceptable conclusion. That is their one requirement for whatever they study, whatever they talk about.
That's unacceptable.
Now, What I just said?
No. What they believe.
What they believe?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unacceptable that God is an unacceptable conclusion.
Well, it's unacceptable that they would just close their mind like that because, I mean, if you're really searching for truth, you need to keep all avenues open, and we believe that.
We should keep all avenues open, whether it's scientific or spiritual.
Right.
You know, hey, if you're listening to the show today and you're really, you know, maybe you're not sure where you are with this whole God thing, you have to be at least open-minded enough that you don't just say, well, if God is the answer, I automatically close the door because I don't want that answer.
Right.
You can't do that. You can't do that. Otherwise, you're just closed-minded. For example, have you heard of the Peter Jennings special, The Search for Jesus, a long time ago? It was years and years ago. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, they used a source in there called the Jesus Seminar. And these people in the Jesus Seminar are trying to find out who Jesus really was. But to them, the fact that Jesus might be God is an unacceptable conclusion. So what they do, they examine everything Jesus did and said, and then they remove the miracles because miracles are impossible.
Right.
And then they remove the claims that Jesus might be God because that couldn't have happened. And then they go, okay, here's the real Jesus. But that doesn't make sense. I mean, what if Jesus really did do those miracles?
Right.
What if he really was the Son of God? Mm-hmm. You can't. I'm not saying you come to it assuming he was.
Right.
But I'm at least coming to it saying you have to be open to the fact that he was.
Definitely.
That you at least listen to his claims. Look, miracles and claims to be God were unacceptable with these guys' preconceived notions. After removing the miracles and claims to be God, they came to the conclusion that, surprise, Jesus was just a good man. Now, is that scientific or logical?
That is...
Neither! Neither is the answer.
Well,
I gave you an either-or dichotomy, and you accepted it.
That's why I was confused.
Yeah, it's neither scientific nor logical. Mm-hmm. They start out with one conclusion already in place. God is an unacceptable conclusion, and whatever the answer is, it cannot be God. So whoever Jesus is, he cannot be God. But to find the truth, we must allow for any conclusion, even if the answer is God.
Right.
On this radio show, we even say we must be open to the truth, even if the answer is not God.
Right.
If we have a scientific answer, cool. If we don't, good. We even say, if we can't show that Jesus is risen from the dead,
oh yeah,
we shouldn't be doing this Christian thing.
We're to be pitied above all men.
That's right. So we must allow for the answer to be God or not. Either way. Now, this naturalism, there's really two different types of naturalism, Dave. Are you ready to be schooled in naturalism?
School me, because I'm really kind of unaware of naturalism.
All right. There's metaphysical naturalism.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for this? All right. In metaphysical naturalism, there's materialists and pantheists, like we talked about earlier. They believe that everything reduces to natural material. There are no miracles, no supernatural causes in the world. Sometimes they call miracles impossible or even irrational. Now, what's the problem with this? The problem is that it would be impossible to ever come to the conclusion that God exists, no matter what the proof,
right,
if this was your belief. If you deny that anything non-material exists, God could appear to you, provide you with feelings, give you good material goods, even speak to you, but you would naturally conclude that something naturalistic has happened.
Right.
Whoa, there's something in the water. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is impossible for you to believe God exists no matter what happens if you think naturalism is true. Even if God shows up. Now, Norman Geisler, we use him a lot. He's awesome. He says, another argument revealing the inconsistency of pure naturalism was offered by C.S. Lewis. Quoting Heldin, Lewis wrote, "If my mental processes are determined wholly by the motion of atoms in my brain, I have no reason to suppose that my beliefs are true. And hence, I have no reason for supposing my brain to be composed of atoms." Isn't that cool?
Well, wouldn't that make your thought process chase each other around all day? I mean, it's just...
Well, and that was C.S. Lewis's point.
Yeah.
If we're only physical, you have no mental capacity beyond just atoms shuffling together.
Right.
How do you know your atoms haven't shuffled together in some wrong pattern if you misunderstood everything?
That's true.
And you really don't have atoms in your brain anyway. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, there has to be something there other than just a physical atom.
Right.
You have a mind and the ability to process information, and your brain has the ability to store that.
All right. Talking about processing information, before we go further, let's go ahead and do a Bible contradiction real quick.
Bible contradiction.
If that's okay with you.
Well, we haven't gotten to methodological naturalism yet,
well,
but...
Okay, well, we're just going to go ahead and do a Bible contradiction anyway.
Fine.
Anyway, our Bible contradiction today comes from the New Testament, and basically, let's set this up real quick.
Okay.
When Jesus was crucified...
He died.
A centurion said something that was recorded in three of the Gospels.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. In Matthew 27:54, he said, "Truly, this was the Son of God." Mark 15:39 says substantially the same thing, adding the word "man," rendering it to be, "Truly, this man was the Son of God."
Okay.
And then Luke 23:47 records the word of the centurion as follows: "Certainly, this was a righteous man."
Okay.
He's probably a surfer dude. Righteous.
Righteous.
What did the centurion really say while Christ was on the cross?
I don't get it. What's wrong with this?
Basically, it's saying that the centurion said two different things.
Well, I mean, okay. Right? We have this
Well,
big,
okay, that's what they contend.
We have this whole big list of, you know, things that people do wrong when they interpret the Bible, when they say they have Bible contradictions.
Like not reading the Bible?
Like not reading the Bible. Mistake 21. Mistake 20. Here, I'm just going to say this is really just failing to understand what the Bible is. The Bible is literature. It records things to give the truth of the situation. Mm-hmm. Okay, in here, basically, if you look up the Greek in these different verses, what you're going to find out that there's Greek words that are masculine.
Right.
And so inserting the word "man" inside one of these is not a big deal. I mean, you could... You know, like if I look over at you and say, "Dude," and someone else looks over and says, "Yeah, he was talking to a guy." Uh-huh. I mean, that's correct. Okay, so but
not necessarily, wouldn't necessarily have to be.
Well, probably.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would have gone, "Dude, it."
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
The second thing is, I mean, the guy could have said all three of these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, presumably he didn't just say one quote and then walk away and left, you know. "Dude, truly this was the Son of God. Well, I'm out of here. It's my lunchtime."
Gotta have a cheeseburger.
You know, he could have continued to talk about it and said all three things. Or number three, I think the main one is the biblical records don't have to be exact word for word quotations.
Right.
I mean, they're recording the truth of the situation. They're not.
Wouldn't it be safe to say that all three of these quotes would actually be true anyway?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's the point. I mean, whether the guy said, "Truly this man was the Son of God," or "Truly this was the Son of God," either way that's recorded, mm-hmm. it's accurate, and it gets the point across.
Jesus was righteous.
Yeah. So, well, and we're not going to say what the centurion said was true. The Bible records people lying
right.
all the time.
That's true.
The question is whether they accurately record what the person said. And I think they've accurately recorded it, no matter which of these quotes was the
right.
exact quote.
All right.
And that's the answer for Bible contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
Way to knock that one down.
Yeah, that one was just kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, methodological naturalism. All right, this type of naturalism allows that God and miracles might exist, so we're okay, mm-hmm. we're better.
Okay.
But we have to deny their existence.
What?
When you study.
What?
Because they say if you don't deny the existence of spiritual things when you study, you run into a God of the gaps theory. Do you have any idea what a God of the gaps theory is?
God of the gaps is basically when you can't explain anything, it's automatically God.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, I'm getting smarter all the time.
So on a math test, when the teacher gives you 328.2 divided by 19.7, you can't do it. You're just right. This is a mystery of God.
All right.
You know, and more often.
You could. You'd be wrong.
Math teacher would not accept that answer. She's a naturalist. No,
right.
I'm just kidding. You know, a lot of times that happens in like biological science. Christians get blamed for just saying, "Well, no, evolution's not true because, you know, just
right.
God did it." And people say they're not looking at the evidence. They're just assuming God did it.
Right.
We have a gap in knowledge, so they just throw God in there. But here's the problem. Because we don't want to do God of the gaps, do we?
No, we don't.
We don't want to do that. We want to study and know truth.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the same thing as the other form, is that if you have to assume it's material, it's natural, what if there really was something spiritual going on?
Right.
You would never know it.
And you don't want to miss out on something like that.
That's right.
If
we're
it's
not
true.
Saying, we're not saying insert God into everything.
Right.
We're just saying insert God into the appropriate places.
Right.
Allow for God so that if the evidence is clear and 100% and God himself shows up,
all right,
then you can believe in God.
Right. We're talking about naturalism today, and we're going to talk more about it coming up right after the break. So
TruthRevolution.tv.
Truth Revolution.
And welcome back, Truth Revolution, where chocolate and peanut butter mix perfectly.
No, faith and reason. Faith and reason.
Same type of thing, though.
So we've got like a spiritual Reese's peanut butter cup.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
It's perfect.
That's a good analogy. Speaking of Reese's personality peanut butter cups, check out Revolution Church.
Yeah, that's going to be kicking off here in less than an hour.
10:15 a.m. is when we do this. And right now we're in the middle of a series about Facebook. I'm preaching about Facebook and Twitter.
Silly statuses.
Actually, it's called stupid statuses.
Well,
you don't want to be offensive?
Mm-mm.
I'll be offensive.
Okay.
Stupid statuses. It's things that we post on Facebook and Twitter that, and we're just going to compare them to God's teaching in the Bible and say, how does this compare?
Right.
So, check us out. 10:15 a.m. You are more than welcome to come.
Yeah, it's a fun series that we're doing.
Yeah, plus we got a rocking band and stuff and a good coffee bar. So, yeah, you know. I mean, God's the most important thing, but those other things are kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we've been talking about naturalism, and we've said that the problem with naturalism, basically, you know, whether you say everything's natural, there's nothing spiritual, or whether you say we're not supposed to use spiritual stuff when we study science or whatnot, is even if God himself showed up, you would have no reason for believing in him because you've already rejected him. So we should note that if God and miracles do exist, that we may be missing the point by denying a priori an entire category of answers.
Okay, explain a priori.
Okay, basically, like ahead of time without cause.
Okay,
like if you say, "Well, I'm not even going to go to, you know, the city hall to get my marriage license today because it's going to burn down."
Right.
Well, you haven't even seen the fire yet, dude.
Right.
That's denying the existence a priori. Right.
All right.
So, and it's not always bad because some things make sense to do, but basically you don't want to do that a lot. And when you're a naturalist, you deny anything spiritual a priori,
right,
you know, ahead of time without any evidence.
It's a prerequisite for being a naturalist.
Yeah. David Hume was a naturalist, and he said David Hume, by the way, is a famous philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't heard of him, look him up. He's I'm not saying he's a good philosopher, but actually he was good on a lot of points. He's a good thinker. He's a very smart man.
Recognize the name. We must have talked about him before.
So I don't think so. You're just smart enough to know.
Oh, well,
and he shares your name. He says miracles are a violation of the laws of nature. And Hume's argument against miracles is summarized as follows. Number one, a miracle by definition is a violation of a law of nature. Number two, but the laws of nature are built upon the highest degree of probability. Okay, you see what he's doing here?
Mm-hmm.
So far, miracle is a violation of nature, but laws of nature are the highest degree of probability. Number three, hence, a miracle by definition is based on the lowest degree of possibility or probability. Number four, the wise man should always base his belief on the highest degree of probability. Number five, therefore, the wise man should never believe in miracles.
I think that's an attempt at a logical argument.
It was an attempt at a logical argument. Now, so basically what he's saying is, look, laws of nature is what always happens. Miracles, you know, go against that. If you're smart, you always go with the highest probability, which is nature, not spiritual stuff. So if you're wise, believe not in miracles. Believe in nature.
Wow.
Now, here's the problem. I would agree with number one, that a miracle is a violation of the law of nature.
Definitely.
Unless by law he means it cannot be broken even in theory. Then he's already classified miracles as impossible without opening his eyes.
Right.
All right. Number two and three, I totally agree. Laws of nature are built on the highest degree of probability. Absolutely. Miracles are based on the lowest degree of probability. Absolutely. That's why they're miracles.
Right.
Number four is where I disagree with him. He says the wise man should always base his belief on the highest degree of probability. Now, I agree this is usually the case. You shouldn't buy lottery tickets. I don't buy lottery tickets because a wise man should always base his belief on the highest degree of probability.
Right.
Buying a lottery ticket is almost the lowest degree of probability.
Mm-hmm.
But I went on a rant about lottery tickets.
That's okay. I don't buy them either.
You don't?
No.
Did you used to?
No.
I used to buy them when I was like 16.
I can't afford them.
At the store, I could get them when I was like 16. For some reason, they'd sell them to me. But I turned 18 and was like, this is dumb.
Yeah.
So anyway, aside from lottery tickets, I disagree that the wise man should always base his belief on the highest degree of possibility. For future events, we agree most of the time, but not for past events.
Right.
The probability that life would exist, in even in evolutionary theory, is extremely small. So according to his logic, we shouldn't even believe in our own existence, because it's the lowest degree of possibility. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for past events, things that have already happened, such as potential miracles, we shouldn't believe in the thing that is the highest degree of probability, because that doesn't make sense. Denying God's existence a priori would be naturalism of the gaps.
Right.
This is what he's doing. Not God of the gaps, it's naturalism of the gaps. So we should seek to find the truth about God, whether miracles have interacted with nature or not, and we should simply we don't want to throw out good explanations. We want the best explanation scientifically, philosophically,
right,
everything we can get out of it, but we don't want to just deny religious possibilities altogether.
Right. Well, you know, if a naturalist actually one day finds out that, you know, he was wrong,
yeah,
it's just like, well, I could have kept an open mind.
Sure.
But
well,
you didn't.
I think the whole point is the naturalist will never find out he's wrong because he's not willing to even consider that fact.
Right.
It's kind of like telling someone, hey, we got a new theme park in Salina. And they go, imagine we do.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, no, we don't. Like, no, really, we do. It's down here at the end of 9th Street.
Uh-huh.
No, it's not. He's never going to find out we have an amusement park because he's not even willing to go look. You know. Now, let's jump back to the near-death experiences for a minute, because I think near-death experiences give us some good evidence that the spiritual realm is real.
All right. What do you say about scientists speaking of near-death experiences?
Mm-hmm.
You watch Discovery Channel and stuff like that, and then you see scientists saying, well, you know, near-death experiences are simply chemicals in the brain, mm-hmm. you know, kicking off and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, sure. And they might be in some cases,
mm-hmm.
This is why I want to talk about NDEs, because I think that we often assume that's the case, but we have good evidence that that's not the case a lot of times. That Michael Sabam guy, the cardiologist, I don't really know how to pronounce his name, Sabam, mm-hmm. Sabam, Michael S.
Just do your best.
What did you say?
Just do your best.
Just do my best?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I thought you said something else. He claimed to have seen specific details during the operations or working on them after they have died.
Right.
Now, here's one NDE patient from his studies. He says, he saw himself and he says, the doctor hit me right in the center of my chest, and then they were pushing on my chest kind of like artificial respiration. They shoved a little plastic tube like you'd put in an oil can. They shoved that in my mouth. Now, this guy was dead, legally dead. And the medical explanation, what they actually were doing was a chest thump followed by external cardiac massage and an insertion of an airway. This is what they actually did medically. And the guy who was pronounced dead,
he saw it.
Another one says that they were pulling my eyelids up to see where my eyes were, I guess, and then they were feeling around my neck where the pulse is. Explanation? They were checking for palpitary responses and cardioid pulse. Carotid pulse. Another one, an NDE patient, this guy who had been declared basically dead, he says, Dr. B came up and decided to put one in my left, well, not in my armpit, but kind of on my side. And this guy noted even who the doctor was, even though he was supposedly dead. He saw the doctor. He explained someone putting something in his side by his armpit. And this was an insertion of a subclavian vein catheter. Another NDE patient, he says, well, they gave shots first in the groin down there somewhere, and a little needle they were putting in my hand. There's something about blood gases, hearing what they were talking about. Medical explanation, they were drawing arterial blood gases from the femoral artery and the radial artery. And these are no medical or scientific explanations are sufficient for these stories where these people had been declared dead,
right?
And they went in and did a couple medical things on these bodies,
right?
To hopefully resuscitate the people, and then they came back, but they were able to see what was going on. Now, the 25 seasoned coronary care unit patients with backgrounds similar to NDE group, but who had not been encountering NDE, were asked to describe CPR from the standpoint of an onlooker. So, in other words, these people who've been in the very similar positions as these patients.
Mm-hmm.
Describe what these people are doing to you. And their explanations were terrible. Okay? So, I mean, it wasn't even close.
Right.
Because you're looking at these, and I know what some people are thinking. Well, maybe they just, like, felt a prick down there, even though they've been declared dead.
Right.
But even the people who knew what was going on tried to explain it, and they didn't have as good of explanations as these people who had seen it after they'd been declared dead.
So we're not just talking about, go to the light, I'm in a tunnel, I'm going to the light.
No, that's not what we're talking about.
We're talking about people that actually have risen above their body and looking down.
Seen what's going on. Knowing things in parts of the hospital that they couldn't have known because of their state of being. Douglas Gruthius, he's a good philosopher, he says the NDE does give us a glimpse of vast and varying spiritual dimensions. This realm is not the final state of the soul, but an intermediate state of detachment from the body and engagement with an immaterial but not wholly benign spiritual reality.
Wow.
That's kind of neat. There was a psychologist named William Serdahelli. He was talking about these as well. He said, one is forced to the conclusion that either science is missing a fundamental link, which would explain how organized experiences can arise in a disorganized brain, or that some forms of experience are transpersonal. That is, they depend on a mind which is not inextricably bound up with the brain. And so this psychologist is even saying, look, guys, so either science is missing something completely, or there really is some sort of spiritual thing going on. And I think these NDEs show us that there's something spiritual going on. Now, we can go back, and if you don't find these satisfying, that's fine. Go back to our radio histories at truthrevolution.tv. Come to Revolution Church, and we talk about evidence all the time, historical, logical, factual evidence. But I think these just kind of represent an interesting piece to this argument.
And this isn't something that we talk about all the time. This is, I mean...
Actually, let's make this the near-death experience show.
Yes.
Near-death-experiences.tv. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's not do that.
Okay. Near-death experiences are from people who have probably experienced clinical death, but not resurrection. Okay, these people aren't rising from the dead. One thing to note is that belief in God and participation in religious experiences increases dramatically after someone has an NDE.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Now, here's actually a weird one. People who attempt suicide often experience hellish NDEs, and their recidivism rate of suicide is much lower compared to other people who attempt suicide. That's interesting.
It is.
Some people have biblical truths confirmed by NDEs. Some people are taught very unbiblical things during their NDEs, and so we can't say that all NDEs are good. Good.
Right.
Sometimes they may be taught things by an evil spiritual realm.
Right.
By Satan. So, hey, just check out the evidence, man. NDEs possibly point to a spiritual realm beyond naturalism.
Study and learn.
Because opinions are of no concern.
Exactly.
Check out our other shows, truthrevolution.tv. Hey, coming over to Revolution Church, we start at 10:15. So get on out of your bed, head on over, listen to us. I was going to make a rhyme, it didn't work. Anyway, check out truthrevolution.tv. We'll see you at Revolution Church in just a little bit.